chose to be the father of my children, was an addict long before we even met. He did everything and anything the pharmaceutical industry could throw at him except heroin. In a recent programme on Channel 4, he topped the poll of drug-crazed musicians who, by all the laws of nature, shouldn't be alive. Strange as this may seem, I didn't see this as a problem at the time. It went with the territory, a territory I was literally born into. That old cliché of sex, drugs and rock and roll. The chaos, the craziness. It all seemed normal to me. It's only when you come out the other side that you think, oh my God, how did we survive that? It's been over 2 years since we celebrated Ozzy's first incredible year of no booze and no drugs on 21st April 2005. That milestone, so unbelievable at the time, is now long gone. In that first year, there had been wobbly moments, mornings when I would wake up with my instinct saying something wasn't right, and the tension running through me like the high-pitched hum of an electricity pylon. I would get through the day in a state of panic, snapping at anyone who came near me, even Minnie, my Pomeranian, the only one, naturally, who would snap back. I would worry myself sick when we were apart, just as I had worried myself sick about the children when they were small, convinced that if I wasn't with them, something bad was sure to happen. For the first couple of years, my husband went to an AA meeting every day. It seemed to me that those meetings with other recovering alcoholics were like a substitute drug for him. He needed them. As for me, I was terrified that if he missed even one, he might say, fuck it, and give it all up, as had happened so many times in the past, and I'd find myself once again in that dark place I had only just emerged from. He didn't. Gradually, the not drinking, the not chucking painkillers down his throat as if they were Tic Tacs, became more natural both to him and to those around him. These days, although he still does his meetings, he doesn't need them in the same way, and they're no longer every day. Best of all, my husband has a hit record. Not only does that give him a high better than any drug invented, it's proof to him and to the rest of the world of what I have been saying all along, that he doesn't need outside stimulants to release his creativity. In the autumn of 2005, I had my own project to worry about. Let nobody tell you writing an autobiography is easy. I was always determined to be honest, but this decision came at a cost. People's memories of the same event can be surprisingly different, even things that appear relatively straightforward, like the story of a fight my husband and I had in New York in the mid-80s at the Hard Rock Cafe. Inevitably, it was while Ozzy was working on an album, when he was at his most belligerent and difficult. Four people there that night came up with four different versions of what happened, and that's not counting Ozzy himself, who has no memory of the evening at all. Of all the people whose reaction has been, no, you're wrong, it wasn't like that, the most upsetting for me has been my brother. Even though we shared our childhood and adolescence, from poverty in Brixton to diamonds and racehorses in Mayfair and Wimbledon, his memory of those early years is very different from mine. Ask him if he was happy, and he'll say yes. From the moment he was born, David adored my mother and she adored him, and David is still angry with me at my depiction of her. He sent me a letter at the time of publication telling me how hurt he was, but as I wrote at the beginning of the book, memory is a strange thing. What follows is only my memory of what happened in my life. I cannot say this is how it happened, I can only say this is how it seemed